stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
We welcome you aboard our Highway of Guide.
If you're standing, please hold on to the handrails and stay clear of the automatic doors. They will be closing in a moment. Thank you.
If this is your very first time to the Monorail Tales podcast, a very warm welcome to the show. And if you're one of our regular listeners, it's really great to have you back with us. Creating this episode tonight, we have co-hosts Rick and Steve. And along with Steve is his better half, which happens to be me, Sheila. And the star of tonight's show, with the spotlight shining brightly down on him, is a very, very special guest, a fellow podcaster with his own podcast show, which we will learn more about later into this episode. So I believe we have lots of fun things to talk about. So without further ado, it's my great pleasure now to introduce our guest, Mr. Kurt Stone. Welcome to the show, Kurt.
Thank you, Sheila. What a nice welcome. Great to be here.
And I have to say this, I have to get it out my system. Kevin Curtis Allen, I thought, wow, what a cool name to have. And then I heard, oh, Kurt Stone. You're up there with names. You've got a nice, perfect name to be a podcaster.
Oh, really? Except someone else has got, there's a Australian chef, I think, with the same name as me. So other than that.
Yes. He has his
I got to compete.
Yeah, he's got his own like cookware.
Yeah, TV show, the whole thing. So yeah, it's tough to compete.
Yeah.
Yeah, but is that his real name or did he copy yours?
Yeah. I mean.
I'd like to think, Sheila.
Okay, let's get started. And like with all of our shows, we always start back at the beginning. If you wouldn't mind just giving us a little bit of background, who Kurt Stone is, you know, where you were born, where you grew up, how Disney came into your life, and where you are today with family and location.
Absolutely. So I grew up in Connecticut in a small town, kind of a factory town, and kind of relate this to my Disney. I can remember neighbors of mine going down to Disney World, especially driving down and feeling kind of like I wish I could go, but I never went as a child. And my wife really has the same kind of story. We never had the opportunity to go to Disney World. Of course, we watched all the Disney programs and wished we could go. I can remember my neighbors bringing back fireworks, too, from south of the border, which is another thing that I was jealous of. We would have fireworks when they went to Disney World because they were coming back and they sold them in South Carolina there. But that's probably my, if I go back the farthest thinking about Disney World. And as I grew, my wife, again, has the same parallel. And her and her sister always wanted to go. So it was a driving thing that we always wanted to do, but we never had a chance to. And then take it quite a few years later in the technical field. I was doing a software program and development in a product called Lotus Notes from the Lotus software. And I got a job. I was there about a month and they asked me if I wanted to go down to a conference. They had an extra ticket and it was at Disney World. And this was 1999. And I was so excited. I was excited for the technical opportunity to learn, and which I enjoyed to do also. And it was at the Dolphin and the Swan, but I couldn't get a room at the Dolphin and the Swan. They were all sold out back then, 1999. They would sell out 10,000 tickets to this conference without a problem within a week or two. So I ended up staying in the Downtown Disney Resorts. And guys, I was floored. Like, I had no idea what was there. Just the Downtown Disney hotels and the combustion, just the traffic and busyness of it really was amazing. Then I really fell in love with the Dolphin and the Swan, and the conference was spectacular content wise. And you guys know what that area is like, and I always say I grew up around that boardwalk area. And so my wife was very jealous. Our kids were young. We remember taking them to a place here called Lake Compounds. It's right across from ESPN in Bristol, Connecticut. It's one of the oldest amusement parks in the country, if not the oldest. And my kids were little. They were like under 8 years old. And I have three of them. And I can remember them crying hysterically all on the ground one day. And I said to my wife, we are never taking these kids anywhere on vacation or anywhere until they grow up. But so we waited till my youngest was 6 years old, which was only about, I think it was like 2003 we went. And my wife fell in love with Disney World also. And she wanted to go. So we've started going every year since then. And yeah, so I have three kids. They're all grown up now, though. So it gives me lots of time to do my podcast.
When you went down, did you drive down on that trip?
The first time, no, we flew. And then I'm trying to remember some of the first three trips. I know we started definitely taking advantage of things like annual passes. And I know, and then one of the, I think it was the third time down, we did drive. So we did drive that one time. I've drove a couple times. My daughter ended up doing the college program when she was in college a couple of years. So, but yeah, we used to fly.
I was just wondering if you bought fireworks on your first trip. Just
no, I don't. You know, that's funny. It was such a, it's such a hysterical thing when you're driving down I-95 along the eastern coast, and there's these signs for like miles and miles and miles to south of the border. It was kind of a disappointment. It was kind of broken down when we first went. I remember that first time when my daughter Lindsay and I drove in the college program. They had improved it a little bit, but yeah. I don't think I ever even bought any fireworks, maybe a little bit.
So you were just saying, talking about Lindsay being in the college program. My question was going to be, did your kids pick up the bug once they got to see Disney also?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they always enjoyed it. And even as adults, you get that question, will they still go with you when they're adults? And, you know, just as an example, we went, my wife and I have DVC at Bay Lake Tower. We did a 2-bedroom for our 25th wedding anniversary, and all the family went. And they all had good times. I can even remember my oldest. He's 30 years old now. A couple of years ago, he went down just solo by himself and with us. And, you know, he said to my wife later, he said, you know, Mom, I really had a great time with you. So my kids still, we enjoy vacationing together. We still enjoy each other's company. And we're still pretty close. And Lindsay, of course, probably the most engaged with Disney World of the three. But they all three do totally enjoy it.
That's good. So Lindsay, I know, has been out of the program, but is she still down there? Or?
No, she's okay. She's graduated college now. She's working. You know, during the pandemic, I helped her get a job where I work, and she's still living at my house here and works out of the house with me across the hall. Yeah. So no, she didn't stay down at Disney World. I don't think she really likes the weather there, to be honest with you.
Ah.
She doesn't like the warm weather.
That can make a difference.
There's different aspects of living and working in Orlando, like the traffic and those kinds of things. You know, being alone. She's kind of a family gal. She likes hanging out with us. So
yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So you were a college program dad, and we have another soon-to-be college program dad on board here, Rick. Anything you want to add here?
I'm very excited for our daughter to start her college program. Your daughter, when she did it, was she still in school, or did she wait till after she graduated to do it?
She was still in school. She did two tours of it also. I think there may have been a year separating. And she was going, by that time, she had a bunch of things going on where she left one school and then went to another. So during that transition, she went on one program, and then she was going part-time to college. So, yeah. So she was kind of in school and doing the program for like 6 years, if I remember right.
Yeah. So, but she liked it well enough that she did it a second time.
Yeah. Yep, definitely.
Awesome. We're so excited for our daughter.
Yeah, it's hard work, too. You know, it's certainly a big difference between being on vacation at Disney World and working there.
Yes.
The first time she started out in like parking cars, which she absolutely hated. She luckily enough, they did end up switching her to work merchandise, and it was down at Disney Springs. She had a pretty good experience there where she was at the Marvel store when it first opened.
Oh, cool.
The very first Avenger store. Yeah. Superheroes. She did that. Actually, she would combine that. So there was one that she didn't like, which was a candy cauldron. I remember talking about a lot, which she always felt like she came home smelling like, I don't know, cotton candy or something. I think it was the candy apples that she hated.
Yeah.
She smelled it all the time. But yeah, and then I remember they didn't actually tell you till you got down there what you're going to do. I mean, like the day that you arrive, you finally learn what you're going to be doing. Now, I remember on the ride down, we were driving down and she got an email saying that she was already assigned, and it was the Yacht and Beach Club merchandising. And I was excited for her for doing that because I figured that'd be a lot easier gig than it was Disney Springs. And it ended up being that way too. It was more relaxed atmosphere. You know, after everyone goes off to the parks, it got kind of quiet. And so, yeah, that ended up being a pretty good experience for her too.
Yeah, that's one thing that's causing my wife a lot of anxiety is, you know, not knowing what her daughter's going to be doing while she's down there, because they find out the week before what it is, and then like when they get there, they find out where it is.
Yeah, she was a little disappointed she wasn't in the parks, to be honest with you, but definitely she settled into the Yacht and Beach Club. That worked out pretty well. Of course, she got a chance to go in the parks all the time. So
I was about to say, how much did she enjoy that part, being able to get into the parks whenever she wanted? Well, not whenever she wanted, but, you know, when she had time.
She really did enjoy that part, and she made one really close friend she still keeps in touch with, who ended up working. She was an electrical engineering student, ended up working at Disney World, and I think she switched over to Universal, if I'm right, or maybe a subcontractor that builds things for them or something like that. But yeah, so she made a friend and hung out, and you know, she could tell you and do all the hand motions of Fantasmic because she saw it so many times. She's definitely like us, where she can go over and over and over again and never get sick of it.
Well, that's good. Now, let me ask you something. If you had a chance to do it all over again and you had an opportunity to do the college program, would you have done it?
Would I have done it?
Yeah.
You mean when I was a college student?
Sure. Or, hey, there's nothing stopping you from going back into school and giving it a try.
I'd be in the retired. They have a retirement program. That's the one.
From what I understand, the oldest college program person was 71.
I think so. I did hear, actually, you know, she did have a roommate who was middle aged, I would say,
and really?
She was going back to school. So yeah, you're absolutely right. She did. Yeah, she was going back for teaching or something like that. I forgot. Yeah,
stayed in the dorms. Wow.
Yeah, for a little bit. I think she didn't make it through the whole program, if I remember correctly, though. Some personal thing happened, but yeah, I was thinking about that. You were asking what job, you got a question of what job I would like to do, but I've always liked serving people too, in a way. I mean, the jobs in Disney World are hard on the cast members. I feel sorry for them in some ways. One thing I did do in college, I worked at the gym, which I loved doing, and setting up for events. I think if I worked in that kind of capacity, maybe at a show or something, I certainly would love that kind of thing, or even setting up and taking down events, that kind of stuff. I always kind of like that kind of work. So I would have liked that better than the college jobs I had, because I worked in factories and all kind of junky jobs. So it would have been a whole lot better being in Florida.
I'm with you. I worked in automotive, pumping gas and everything else. So
yeah, right. Yeah. Anything would have been an improvement.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you this. any sort of like just a normal year, and I know this past year was kind of special because there was a big event that took place, and we are going to get to that a bit later as well. But in a given year, how many times do you and your wife head down to Disney?
Yeah, it's been a long time since it's been a normal year, Sheila, to be honest with you. Because we had, well, when my daughter was doing the college program, I went down twice just to drop her off and bring her home, because I drove the car down there. Plus my wife and I had a trip. And now I've got my community who seems to want to go every year too. So I would definitely say, you know, over the last several years, I've probably been 2 times a year.
Okay. Can we lose the word wife and actually put her name?
Margita.
Margita. Am I pronouncing it right?
Margita. Yes. It's
Margita. That's pretty.
Oh, thank you. It's not Mexican. It's Spanish. It's actually her dad was Latvian. That part of the country's been on the news as of late, the Baltic state countries. But yeah.
Now, when you guys go down, is there a kind of a certain time of year that you would prefer to go down?
That's a great question. I think definitely would be really spring or fall. I think she's in the same place, although we haven't been at Christmas time in a while, but I would say spring or fall. Summer, we had to do it when the kids were young because of school.
Right.
And now it's nice. We do like the festivals, the Flower and Garden Festival. We're going this year in June. We've got our good friends, Auntie Judy and Uncle Ken. They got their 50th wedding anniversary, so we're going to be celebrating that in June. We're going down June 4th, and ours is in May, so we're kind of celebrating our anniversary. We've done that kind of trip, but we definitely have enjoyed the fall too, with the fall food and wine festival, and she loves the Halloween stuff too. So those are probably our two favorite times.
That's when we're going down to take our daughter for check into her college program.
In May?
June, that weekend.
Okay. For the summer? Yeah. I'm trying to remember, is there a 4 and a 6 month or something program? I don't know how they're doing it now.
Yeah, she's doing it June 6th through January 5th.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good long time. Yeah, 6 month program. Okay. We've done February too quite a bit, so Sheila.
Right.
It's nice to get away from the winter too.
Yeah, but then you have to go
especially
back
from
to
Connecticut.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's horrible. It's been cold. Last 2 days it's been 20 degrees and wind blowing. I can't wait for it to warm back up again. Mm.
It's kind of funny because we're only 8 hours drive from Disney. So, you know, we were able to go very short notice. And I think my time that I liked going to Disney was in the cooler months and quieter months. But looking on Facebook these days, I don't know if there's such a thing as quiet months anymore.
No, I would say even this past trip that we did in early February, that was the time that was about the time my conferences were. I did like 7 of those conferences. They were end of January, about the same time. And it was back then, early 2000s, mid, 2008. It was pretty quiet. That was one takeaway for sure. Had this last trip, it's back, baby. It's like crowded. Everyone's there again. And we always say this, there's no downtime. We kind of laugh at that question. When's the downtime? When's the good time to go? If you're talking about crowds, forget it. I always say to them, don't think it that way. Think about how can I beat the crowds? Look for strategies to beat the crowds, because there's not a downtime. I mean, there's crowded and then there's insanely crowded. That's it.
Yeah.
That's quite a good comment there, actually. Good attitude to sort of kind of go with. Now, when you actually go on your vacations, how long is your normal kind of length of stay?
It's funny. It always like extends, it seems like. My wife and Margita and Judy, they both are planners, and they are always looking for something. I'll get a call or now that I'm working upstairs, she'll say, "Hey, hey, look, they just dropped the airfare. We could stay another night." But, you know, we pretty long stay. I mean, between 9 and 10 days, a lot of times are right. stays.
Wow. Because when Steve and I go, we only go at best
two nights.
Yeah, if you're closer, it makes sense too.
Yeah. So you're Saint Margita does the planning. Do you have any say in the planning?
Very little. I have. It's kind of a joke on my podcast. I get like one dining reservation. Matter of fact, I've even been stripped of that this trip because I went by myself to the Grand Geek and Gathering, and yeah. So she's a little jealous. She hasn't been as much. I went twice, and she hasn't been in a couple of years. So. I'm not getting a whole lot, but that's okay. They're picking great stuff anyway.
She's a travel planner, isn't she?
Yes. Yep. They've built a little travel business outside of my podcast.
Oh, so you were lucky to, you know, even get that one, you know, where you could choose at least one reservation.
They're being pretty good. They're actually asking me. I think they're giving me a hard time. Aww. We always joked. I always wanted to go to Spice Road Table. And because all my listeners, it seemed like there was this theme that so many were coming on my show and talking up so many great things about Spice Road Table. And my wife, she's kind of picky on certain things. And that's a flavor of spice or food that she wasn't interested in. So it was a kind of a inside joke that, but finally I've been there.
I love the Morocco area for food. Did you like Spice Road Table?
I really did. And Rick, it's, you know, again, I remember her telling me about the Tangerine Cafe, how people always rated it very high. And I don't know, something about lamb didn't turn me on. I don't know why. It's funny. From where I'm from, we don't have any lamb. I was never thought of it as much of a something to have. But again, I kept hearing about Tangerine Cafe. I love the olive salad, anything vinegary, like vinegar is kind of spaced. And so I went there and I really enjoyed it. I don't know. They haven't really fully opened up. I don't know. Maybe they have now, but they really hadn't. Matter of fact, they were still doing during the arts festival. I think they were still kind of doing booth stuff, but I really enjoyed it there. And so I was excited. I just love, we did all small plates, you know, they actually consider it a lounge. If you look at their menu, they don't have like dinner, lunch. It just says lounge. So it's all like small plates and it was all fantastic.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And Tangerine Cafe in the past has always been my favorite to get that.
Yeah.
That platter.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's got a nice spice to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I really want? There's speaking again, they're not allowing me to do, because I really like the activities, after hours activities at Epcot and the dessert parties. Or the restaurants we're going to do one at Rose and Crown, because we've done that before. They have a dinner and drinks, all you can drink, and then you get to leave after everyone else has left. And they're doing that at Spice Road Table also, but she wouldn't even go for that. But yeah, it's a great, great, great spot there.
Yep. That's on my list to do.
Probably not well known either. So.
I hear people talk about it, just not actually go.
Yeah, that was one of the things when it first opened up. I was like, oh, this is really, really intriguing because it's right on the water. And it was a new restaurant, always looking out for that in World Showcase. Very excited. When we walked by it that first kind of year, there was nobody there. I went, I'm not that excited about trying it out.
Yeah.
No line. I'm a little bit worried, and I'm not that adventurous in my choices. And yeah, it wasn't until last couple of years I started really hearing more about it. And it was pretty easy to get in. We walk up. You can't do an ADR, but you walk up and give them your name, and I think they text you within 30 minutes. We went out, had a drink, came back. So it was really relaxing, and it was fantastic. Had a great time with a group of people.
Cool.
Recommend it.
Nice. All right, let's get into a little bit of what we're here for and what you have been doing for, oh my gosh, Kurt, how many years?
It'll be 8 years, Stephen.
8 years you've been
April
doing
this 2nd. podcast. April 2nd will be 8 years this coming weekend as we're recording this.
Well, that's funny. So you started after April 1st because I guess you figured no one would.
I think that's just how it worked out. I don't know what day I released my show, but I think it was, I got to go look. I think it was April 2nd for sure.
Okay. So what, I mean, here's the, you know, go-to question. What made you do a podcast? And, you know, did you listen to other ones before or what, you know, what brought you to this?
Yeah. My story, again, just to take it from where I left off, I was doing this technical conference down at Disney World. I became part of a community, a technical community of a bunch of geeks that were tightly knit because of the niche software that we worked in. And it was a community there and a leader who had a podcast with another fellow. So that was early on, probably in the early podcasting days. That kind of intrigued me. The community really intrigued me too. And I watched it from, you know, I went down kind of as an introvert and was kind of a little bit afraid of meeting people in that kind of setting, internet strangers. But I can remember just going to the bar and grill there on the boardwalk, and there was a group of them there, and they were, I mean, top of their game consultants. They were the speakers at the conference, wrote books about the software. And here I am, kind of a nobody, but they welcomed me with such open arms. And I had that first year that I really stepped out of my comfort zone and introduced myself and started talking with those. I had such a great time that conference and then several conferences after that. And then things like Twitter started to come on. This was really only blogging at the time where I met them through blogging and then of course the Facebooks and stuff. But there was such a tight community. That core group still stays in contact with each other, even if they're not doing that software. But that really inspired me. And when I felt I had the time and I was thinking about doing a podcast, I studied podcasting for a couple of years, listening to other podcasts and podcasts about podcasts. Not really sure. I was kind of in the middle of what my topic would be, struggled with that. I wanted it to be something I could do every single week with passion. And Disney World was one of those things. I did also want to have kind of a side gig and monetize a little bit, but I couldn't put the two together at all at the time. I finally said, all right, I know I can do Disney World. Lindsay was on board with joining me, so that was cool having her as someone to work with. And so I just said, I'm going to just do it, get started, learn how to do it, get on my dining room table with my new equipment and my iPad. I was recording off the iPad, I think, at the time through my mixer. And we started, we kicked it off. And that's how that's kind of how it started. And here we are 8 years later every week. I haven't missed a week since.
That's right.
That is quite an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was something I'm really proud of that. Thank you, Rick. And, you know, one of the things that happened was, like I was saying, she was kind of pied fading on me and I would be, come on, Lindsay, I want to record. I want to record. And she wasn't, you know, she kept kind of going, fading on me. But I had already kind of built a community and I had people and I think probably by that time I was doing the trip reports and that was a sweet spot. And so from that point on, I think I might have missed 3 or 4 weeks trying to figure out what I was going to do with her. And then I just, okay, I'm just going at it alone and start, you know, basically doing the interview style with other people. And I was always trying to build the community. That was always a big part. Like I said before, I loved the way that people felt, you know, comfortable meeting each other. And I just had this dream of being down at Disney World with a big group of people. So that's where that all, you know, and all the help that you get through our discussion group that is on Facebook and that kind of thing. So that's what it was all about from the beginning.
So when you first started, was it just you talking about Disney or did you have... Do you remember who your first guest was, other than your daughter?
Lisa Green was her name. So I reached out. I was looking at bloggers.
Yeah.
Travel agents. So matter of fact, Lisa was at my G3. I saw her. She was there. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it was only like the fifth episode. So Lindsay and I, you know, got on. I can remember it was awkward that first few minutes. I was trying to explain what we were going to do. And then Lindsay starts talking, and it just got comfortable like right away. You could, if you listen to my first episode, I noticed that. I don't know if anyone else would, but I'm a little, I don't know if I'm nervous or I'm just not like in gear yet. And then until her and I start the dialogue, then it got, I mean, it sounds the same. If her and I were to get on right now, it would sound the same as that, really, that first episode, I think. So that was really helpful. Just to, it's hard to get on a mic and just talk unless you got to really practice at it and know what you're going to say and all that. But having a conversation with someone was easy. And I pretty early on, I think it was like the fifth episode, I brought Lisa Green, Glenn Kessler. I'm going through this because I know, because of the G3, I was thinking about this. Because Glenn was like on episode 12. He always reminds me. And then Auntie Judy was a friend of ours that we knew from church. And Lindsay and I did a puppet ministry at church. Mm-hmm. And she was very involved in church and that. And actually, my wife, Margita, and her were not friends until we learned. She's somehow, we said, you know, I'm doing a podcast on Disney World, or we were talking about Disney World. She goes, oh, I've been going to Disney World since my honeymoon back in 1972. Had a lot of those moments. It's interesting. I always say to people, Disney World, it's kind of, there's a duality there where you'll say Disney World to someone, they're like, I don't know, you know, I've been there, it was too expensive or whatever, it's hot. And then you'll talk to someone else like, oh my gosh, I have DVC and I just, you know, added points on it. It's like this whole different conversation, and it's kind of fun. But yeah, so a lot of the people that I started with early on are still, a lot of them are still around.
They say you never forget your first, and it's so true, because we have been going now for 5 years, and the very first interview Steve and I ever did was with author and good friend Kim Prejard. And it's so funny, because when I listen to that episode from 5 years ago, and now I listen to what we are putting out, sound-wise, oh, it was awful. You know, the sound of the mics, and, you know, maybe even editing. And yeah, it's surprising how much you grow. Where did you get your name from?
Well, don't forget, I spent about 2 years thinking about it. You know, I kind of want, like I talked about the technical people, I called them geeks. They're, you know, you try to think of nerds or geeks. And I was trying to be something unique. There's probably something in a show name that had geeks in it for Disney World. And so, yeah, I mean, it's an act, it's a verb, geeking on Walt Disney World. And so that's, yeah, it's just something I thought of.
And it stuck, and you've done real well with it. So,
well, thank you. I kind of think so.
Has there ever been a show that just, you had trouble with and just didn't know where to go? Because, I mean, you do edit your shows, right?
It's funny. People think they think about editing. I mean, the most I edit, though, is really ums and ahs and long
good,
pauses.
I'm never on yours.
Yeah.
I did Toastmasters for a year or more, and that's where I hear those ahs and ums. And so I do a lot of editing there. I got to tell you, that you guys probably already know this. I didn't know at the time. Everyone in the Disney community that I've ever interviewed, and I said this to Lindsay when we were interviewing people early on, we'd get off the phone. I mean, Lisa Green, the first one that we did, and we got off and went, because I was a little nervous reaching out to people kind of cold. You know, I don't know what, who knows how it's going to go. And would they say yes? And I'll tell you, even early on, I was at 95%. I mean, nobody really said no unless they really had something going, a commitment of some sort. But the people I was reaching out to all said yes. And they were enthusiastic and positive. And it was, I kept, every time we get off the phone with someone, I was like, wow, that went really well. Yeah. I'm like, sooner or later, I'm going to hit a real clunker. But and I think Kevin Curtis Allen said that to me recently. We were reminiscing. He said, you know, the day is going to come. I was like, I guess, I don't know. Hey, the percentage, I suppose, but who cares now? I've been doing it for 8 years. I haven't hit one yet.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been fantastic. Even like this year, I mean, I've got relationships built now. If I wanted to, I could keep going back to people I know. I never run out of people, but I still like to bring on new people every once in a while. I'll reach out to others, but
yeah,
it's the type of person that is a fan of Walt Disney World. There's no doubt in my mind. There's a positivity, a childlike demeanor, if you want to call it that, enthusiasm. So it's not been a problem in this niche, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's funny you brought up Toastmasters, and the first person I thought about was Margaret Carey. She tells a story about how great that Toastmasters was for her.
It's a great program because you essentially, they got a great agenda that they stick to, and they know they've been doing it for so long. And you learn by doing, just like podcasting. If you're afraid of doing something, just by getting over that fear and getting up, in that case, standing up in front of somebody and just like mumbling something the first few times, get something out. You could like barely catch your breath. And then every time you get up in front of people, it gets more familiar and a little bit easier. It's the same thing with meeting, like I said, the strangers I talk about when we get together in a live meetup. If you can just get past that little bit of fear and find out how wonderful the people are going to welcome you, you'll be fine. So it's just practice.
Hmm. With the show, you do a lot of interviews, a lot of trip reports. My favorite are the multi-trip reports, because that's just amazing. You know how people stay at, you know, one trip and stay at different hotels. One of these days, I'd really kind of like to do that.
Yeah, split stays.
Yeah.
I love split stays.
Yeah.
My wife doesn't like them very much.
I could do it on a solo. I mean, I could do it every other night, you know, or every night for that matter. But it is, if you kind of have a family, and I know of other people who've had families that do it, but yeah.
It's tougher when they're younger. When they get a little older, it's not so bad.
Yeah. But is there any other place you want to take the show, to a different area?
Change anything?
Maybe not change, but enhance or change.
I really hit my sweet spot, Steve, I think. Okay,
I think so. That's,
and I'm really happy with where it is right now. I mean, you could always assume you can always grow the listening base, but I'm pretty pleased with the way it goes. The community is amazing. The trip reports, you know, I had a professor of communication interview me one time. And if you're interested, I'll give you a link to that show. Yeah. But he did a really good interview, I would say. And he was asking the similar kind of questions. And I felt almost a little bit guilty doing the trip reports because it takes pretty much no preparation whatsoever on my part. And it's so simple and it's got a formula, but it delivers everything that I want to achieve and the listener really wants to hear, because you get real world experiences that are timely and you get the opinions of what they're doing, whether it's the resorts, we go deep into the food and things that they liked, that they didn't like, how the planning went, all these aspects of the trip. And tell stories. Yeah, you just want to get, you know, someone enthralled in some kind of funny or interesting or tear-jerking stories and the emotion of it all. So the trip report helps me build community, because anyone who comes on the show obviously is going to listen to it and then tell other people. So that helps with the growth of the show. And I enjoy meeting the new people and bringing them in. And then the listener gets, I think, really good content from it, and it's pretty easy to do. So, I'm like I said, I thought of different things, and I'll do roundtables. Like if you like the split stays, the one I'm editing right now, there's about 15 resorts and all kinds of restaurants, because I got 7 people on at the same time reviewing their trip from G3. So yeah, I like doing the list too every once in a while. I did a few months ago, but Yeah, that's the place I like to be.
Well, that and that's what I was kind of asking, if you wanted to stay in your comfort zone or if you thought about getting out of it. But the neat thing about the trip report is you can do 10 different people staying at the same resort, but you're going to get 10 different stories.
So true. And who you go with is different too, right? Yes, if you go with a small, exactly. If you have small children, if you go solo, if you go, you know, with 20
family members,
big groups, small groups, it's, or yeah, 100 other geeks, you know, all those experiences are definitely different.
Yeah.
Great questions.
You mentioned one thing that I'd like to talk about, going with 100 other of your biggest friends. So, you know, recently it's been touched upon that there was a gathering of friends that you've made from the podcast. So could you maybe tell us a little bit how that started and how, not only how it started, but how it's grown and what it's changed into over the course of the past few years?
Great question. So remember, I had a vision of building community like I experienced with my trips going down for the conferences. So I had that vision already. I always wanted to do this. The first one I did, probably like 2018, I had a smaller gathering, just a meetup, and it was at the Nomad Lounge. Had about 25 people. That was fantastic at the Nomad Lounge. As a matter of fact, I met Dave Youngward there, who is from the Disney Crush podcast. He had just started his podcast within, I think, a month or two. And then the catalyst, in kind of organic the way it occurred, we've talked and mentioned Kevin Curtis Allen from the Isle of Wight, my exotic friend from the UK. And, you know, he's only been, since my whole podcast, to Disney World twice, but avid listener, always messaging me, getting on Facebook videos, and became a character in my show, and people who knew about him was planning this trip in 2019. And so the first Grand Geek and Gathering was born. I think he named it. We got together as a group of planners and began to plan that in anticipation of Kevin coming. And yeah, that was really the big one. I think I wrote, what I have, I had, like, I always keep track of how many listeners I met that I know who are pure listeners, not necessarily spouses or kids or anything. I had about 64 people that I met at that first meeting. So huge success. People that I met through my podcast and interviewed for years, I got to meet for the first time, like Glenn Kessler and Kevin, AJ from the UK, and just go on and on. But, you know, it was just so exciting to meet them in person. There's such a dynamic of really feeling like you know people through the internet, and then when you meet them in person, the energy is just, you know, undescribable. And so, again, I've talked about how great this group of people are. So that was, just went off really, really well. People raved and talked about just how great a time they had, how welcoming people were. And so that was fantastic. We did, Kevin, this is all followed Kevin's trip. So he had planned to go February of last year, and then the UK shut down because of COVID, and Glenn couldn't go because of COVID. But we still had a pretty decent turnout. I ended up, if you count the geeks that I met, it was 50. If you look at the two pictures we did, we kind of take them at Epcot right in the front of World Showcase. The pictures and the group that is there, you can't hardly tell in terms of numbers. So it was really successful, even though, you know, COVID definitely was playing a role in keeping people away. But that went off really well. And then the difference with this year's one, first of all, you know, Kevin was able to come. Glenn was there. There was more people. We knew we had about 100 people that or more that were interested. And thank God COVID didn't get in the way and people were feeling comfortable to go. And then there was this core group of people that had been to one or two of these events already that are returning. So there's a great group of people that already know each other. We've got a lot of the events kind of figured out in the way that we do things. And then you add on another 30 or 40 people that had never been before. It just took it to that extra another level, which was really fantastic.
That's one thing that, you know, because I've listened to your show and heard about it, and I've listened to the Disney Crush and heard about it, and, you know, Mickey File, you know, all these people that are going and attending and knowing each other already. And I would have loved to have gone, but I couldn't because of work. But, you know, in the back of my mind, you know, I know I would have felt a certain level of anxiety and nervousness because a majority of the people seem to already know each other, whereas I don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no. So how the people that are new, you know, of course, you know, everybody's kind and inviting, but how do the people integrate into this already existing group of friends?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's top of my mind and priority. And we meet on a weekly basis on every Wednesday night. We have a Zoom call. A lot of these folks that are planning. And I said, like last fall, I've made it a real point. And that's the culture, you know, too, Rick. It's like a culture that we've built. And they're, remember, these people were new at one point, and they felt the same way that you're speaking of. I felt that way. So I'm very attuned to it. And I said to them, I said, you know, one thing I want everyone to keep in mind, if you see someone who seems like they're new, they're feeling a little comfortable, you know, reach out to them and bring them in and definitely introduce them to everybody. I can think of a couple examples. I won't name names, but I can remember we were at Nomad Lounge, or we call Rope Dropping Nomad Lounge. And this was on Thursday, which was kind of the kickoff day at Animal Kingdom. And then we had about 40 people about 10:30 in the morning at Nomad Lounge. And I could see someone come up. Now, I recognize faces usually from Facebook if I've never met them in person. And I saw this woman with her daughter. And you could tell, you know, you come across this group that's wild and crazy like us, because we all, like you said, know each other and a little bit rambunctious their way in. And I saw one of my leaders just go up and start talking to her and just bring her in and introduce her to people. And so actually, if you listen to my podcast coming out Monday, you'll hear her story. And she actually gets really emotional about it. And we hear this story all the time. People with anxiety, people that have had a tough year during COVID, and just raving about feeling uncomfortable until they, about 5 minutes into meeting us, we did a meeting on, we call it the last planning meeting on Wednesday at Pop Century over at the Petals Bar outside there in front of the resort. And that's a great place to come and meet. And I think this is something that we've learned, that I want to even broaden that to make it more attendable for everyone, so everyone gets a chance to meet each other. And we do other things, like we did the bingo game this year. And then Bill Mitchell will know the bingo game. He was famous for posting this in another group, I guess, that went viral.
That was hilarious.
Which was absolutely hysterical and a lot of talk. But that bingo game was designed for you to walk up to somebody and say, "Hey, I'm trying to fill out my bingo square. Are you left-handed?" And that worked out to be a great icebreaker. And we gave out prizes at the end of the weekend for filling out your bingo card and stuff like that. So I think we'll do more. And that's definitely a focus of ours. We know it's weird meeting internet strangers, and we're all introverts. Actually, I think we all kind of have the same personality. We're all introverts, but we're extroverts once we get to know each other.
Yes.
I'm actually very much an extrovert. So,
all right. You wouldn't have a problem then.
I'm worse than a politician in the first week of November. I'm out there shaking hands, hugging, kissing.
Well, I don't have to worry about you then.
No.
That's great. But most people aren't. I mean,
yes, you're right.
You know, especially, you know, but they do have a connection. Either, you know, I have a connection with almost every single one of them because they've been a guest on my show.
Right.
I would say 95% of them. So.
So with the planning of this then, Kurt, I mean, you're saying that you meet every Wednesday, you know, you met every Wednesday to sort of do the planning, but one person has to be at the end of the day kind of in charge. That would have fallen to you, yes?
You'd think so, wouldn't you, Sheila? No, you know, it's a real consensus. And I mean, it's part planning, part social meeting. Like right now, it's more social than it is planning. And we've got a formula now that we've done three times in a row that we will look to improve on. But right. we have certain activities. We don't want to add any more at all. We want there to be enough space in between there. We want people will already do what they want. They're not going to attend everything. They're going to pick and choose which things they do. A lot of our things that we do, some of them are a little bit formal, like the Kessler Run is a game, the bingo game, or we had this year, which was fantastic, the Epcot Fireworks Dessert Party, which took a lot of planning. But there's probably about 10 people planning, you know, involved with doing one of those things. So, or several things.
So a lot of delegation going on then.
It's more volunteering, quite honestly, which makes it so easy. Like you'd think that I'm not even driving this thing. I mean, it's just, it's phenomenal. I mean, we've all been involved with planning things and it's like, you know, begging people to take certain things. This is nothing like that. They are just like diving in and doing, you know, one, if they just do one, you know, I got someone who's doing the scavenger hunt and I have someone who's doing the Kessler Run and I have someone who's doing the bingo. They're doing it out of pure love and joy of doing it. So.
Well, that says it all there, I think.
Yeah. I mean, in one way, it's a little bit casual because I mean, we had Samantha and Rebecca did an amazing job with ADRs and really coordinating all of they were just with spreadsheets and it was remarkable. We raised a bunch of money for them afterwards. People felt like there's so much work and it was just awesome. So, but yeah, there's a lot of planners in this group.
So between the first time you did this and this year, what was the number difference? Did your numbers go up quite a bit for, you know, people joining in?
To that ended up attending?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, like I think if I look at the numbers, like somewhere in the, like I said, 64 to like almost 100.
Wow.
But even so, I think COVID, you know, we would have had 100. Last year in February, we would have had 100. So definitely the pandemic has impacted it, but it's actually at a scary point right now. Like we're wondering, what are we going to do as it gets bigger? It's so much fun and intimate right now. So that is a concern to one degree. To another degree, I really believe, and I've learned a lot by doing this, there is a culture there and people do follow a culture. And there's a level, you know, of family involved in this. So I'm not too worried, but you know, you do think of those things as it grows.
Put it this way. You just need a bigger venue. It looks like Italy would be good for your next dessert party.
The one we're talking about is doing when Fantasmic opens. That was one that looked a little bit easier to plan. And we did look at it a couple of years ago and you know, they have like a pavilion there and I think it's a little less expensive to do. When they came up with this was a dream of mine in the back of my head to do this dessert party to get, cause you know, I've been to corporate events that they did this that were all paid for us, or you do a dessert party yourself and it's a bunch of strangers that you're, you know, that Disney's doing. But to you have to actually put the money out ahead of time, like $5,000. And when Tony Ann and Mandy Ray, who brainchild this and said and did all the checking in and calling in on this, and Mandy Ray, they were convinced they could do it. And I said Tony Ann, I mean, I can remember that call, that Zoom call. I was like, you got to put the money up front, so you got to collect it all, and it's not refundable. So it's a big risk, and I'm not much of a risk taker, but they were all in. They go, yeah, I think Tony Ann told me later she wasn't that confident.
No, she wasn't. I've heard her talk.
I heard that later. She was so convincing that night. And I was like, you 75 people you got to get. I was like, I mean, we only have 100 like in our Facebook group that we had a special Facebook group just for G3. Like, I don't know, 70, 75. And guys, within 5 days, they had it sold out.
Yeah.
I was blown away.
Now that that's wrapped up, you know, I know that you're still having shows about it, you know, the different topics that you've covered. And, you know, I imagine that you'll still have a few more coming up just because there's so much to talk about. But what are the plans for the next G3? I know that it's really early in the process, but what kind of things are you looking at, maybe time-wise or things like that?
You know, you're having a good event when people start asking before you leave, when's the next one?
Yeah.
And that was happening as I was packing up to go. And when I got home, and we've had these conversations in this Wednesday call. And again, it's probably going to focus around Kevin's next trip. And he's looking at early October 2023. So not this year, but there'll be the following year, which I really like the idea of an 18-month gap here. And so if that's what he's planning on, that seems to work out well, and the conversations have sounded positive. That's what we're probably going to do. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, if I had some lessons learned, that when you talk about future plans, again, we got the bones of this thing that are successful that we know people enjoy, and we'll keep all those. I think lessons learned, we really like the casual lounges that we get together with. There's a lot of us will put together restaurants that we're hanging out with, or parts in the park. We have like Michael's ice cream truck, things that where a big crowd can gather and have conversation and enjoy each other's company. I'd like to do, again, something that kicks it off in the beginning. We talked about maybe at the Riviera that has an open space where we can all get together, and maybe even a closing. I'm going to pass this on with the group, like some kind of more of a closing event, again, where we can get together. Because the way it kind of ended, you don't know when they're leaving. Like people are just peeling off and leave at different times and like that. So I think that's the lessons learned. The lounges are great places to gather, have some nice small plates and food and drink and stuff. And then, so I think that's about, I mean, because this will be the fourth time, we've kind of got the plan of how it works and what people enjoy.
That sounds really fun.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that,
we'd love for you guys to join us. You know,
with it not being a tax season, I should definitely be able to make it.
Yeah, and you know, I love having the other podcasters, and you know, I definitely welcome you guys if you wanted to get involved and engage with it. It's certainly, I've got 4 other podcasters that have kind of trickled in at this point, so I welcome others.
Yeah, we know that Tony Ann girl.
The only other issue I would be really concerned about is the fact, and you probably got even more, but the fact that you know you're guaranteed 2 English people.
I mean, you might have to put a limit.
Well, I've got another really good friend and fan of ours, AJ, who I love if she can. I met her in the first one, and the COVID stuff was... and health stuff was in the way this time, the past couple of years. So I really hope, the UK was shut down up until very recently.
Yeah.
So it's been a tough 2 years, but I welcome them all for sure. I love, I'm English actually in my background. So.
Oh.
Stone.
Oh.
I'm like, right off the boat from the 1600s.
There
you go. Tony and I had mentioned about the meetup, and I think even Kevin Allen also had sort of spoken to me about it. And it was one of those things that, you know, unfortunately we had the big family get together in January, and it just couldn't happen that we could sort of get back down, you know, for this. But I was so disappointed. We had our very first meetup last October, and I mean, Rick will tell you, I think there was less than, what, 20?
That's good.
For a first, yeah, very but I'll tell you what, the feeling that I got from meeting people, having people come up to me, it's, you, to have a, you know, 100 of your friends there, wow.
Kurt, do you remember the first time someone recognized you?
Oh, I hate to say, I love it too. Like you're saying, Sheila, I enjoy it a lot. I don't think I could tell you the first time. I've had some, but there's some that are just so much fun. The enthusiasm, and a lot of times I'll jump. Like I'll never forget when there's a pair of sisters that come up from behind me. I was in the UK pavilion and they tapped me on the shoulder. I jumped like a mile, but they were, they were so enthusiastic, and they've been great, great listeners and involved with the show in the G3 too. But yeah, it never gets dull. It's fun, but you're right. When you meet, I'm going to put this out, and I have a Patreon feed that I do too. I record while I'm down there, but I actually recorded my speech. And whenever I look into the crowd, like when we did the picture at Epcot, and I'm looking at all these people, and I know them pretty deeply,
right,
from all these years. And there's a part in there where I just lose it. I mean, it's just so emotional. And other people, it's not just the meetups. I had someone, guys, this time, and you guys are podcasters, so you can appreciate this, but someone came up to me and said, you know, because of your podcast, she was like, I just had a rough time this year. I've always wanted to go to Disney World, but never got down to Magic Kingdom. I guess she'd been to maybe one park, but she just had this huge dream to go to Disney World. So she started listening to the podcast. She said, I was going through a lot, through depression and anxiety this year because of COVID and all this stuff. And your podcast I found in August, and it just really changed my life. And then I started talking to my husband, and I said, you got to listen to this show. And there's so much, I've learned so much how to get to Disney World. She contacted us, and my wife, Margita, and Judy helped her plan her trip. And then this was right after the meetup of all these people with the swim shorts stunt they pulled on me. She's telling me this story right after the picture. I mean, what do you say to something like that? I mean, I'm like, that's awesome. I mean, it's to have an impact just from a Disney podcast to people. But I've had that more than once.
That's when it really hits home.
Yeah, you're like, realize wow. It's
finally worth every bit of it.
So, what's that stunt that you were talking about?
So there's a story. I'll have to give you, maybe you guys know the story, but I was in Pop Century, and I was walking along with my recorder, recording my thoughts of the day before. And one of my friends comes up to me, Rob Madeiri, and he's walking along me. I'm talking to Rob. And then we go into the food court, and Auntie Judy's there. And hey, you know, what's going on? This is one of the fun things of doing these things, because everyone's staying at the same resorts and you run into people all the time. And she says, I was like, hey, what were you guys doing yesterday? She goes, well, we went back to the pool at the resort here, and Claudia and Dave and the kids came over, and the kids wanted to go swimming, but they didn't have a bathing suit. So Claudia bought them bathing suits. And Margita said to our friend Dave, well, Kurt's got a bathing suit. You can borrow his bathing suit. I don't know what flashback, like I had this like Seinfeld moment. Remember when Jerry Seinfeld and Kramer mm-hmm. comes in to borrow the bathing suit? I don't know if I had the full picture in my mind, but I just went, he borrowed my bathing suit. And I'd never worn it before. It was a USA flag bathing suit Margita just bought me. And I remember Rob just cracking up because he got the joke, and then it became this thing. And there's a picture of Dave wearing my bathing suit. And then I remember my friend Deirdre talking about, remember that Seinfeld? And then we go through, we like put it on YouTube. We're watching the show. It's just a hysterical scene. So it became this thing of the podcast. So when I was going to get the picture taken, Glenn Kessler took me on a different path from where all the people were gathering. And as I got to where we're going to take the picture, I see it's like 25 of my listeners wearing USA bathing suit shorts with the flag.
Yeah.
Over their pants and all kinds.
That's hilarious.
It is.
I mean, it was just like, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, I said, there was the first time I laughed and cried all at the same time. Cause it was just an amazing moment. And then Glenn Kessler had like those basketball pull off pants, and he was wearing the shorts underneath.
Oh, funny.
Because I was staying with Glenn, and I didn't even see him get dressed. He had the shorts underneath his pants. So it was just a whole thing.
Yeah. Where did the title G3 actually come from?
That was just brainstorming, and Kevin Curtis Allen, I think, came up with it. The Grand Geekin Gathering stands for G3Gs.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Grand Geekin Gathering. I wanted it to be the Geek and Family Reunion, but you can't get a G3 acronym out of that.
He's quite clever, isn't he, Kevin?
Well, I don't know. Let's not give him that too much credit.
Yeah.
Let's
not get him too
much credit. Well, I can say it doesn't apply to all English people, Sheila. Well,
no, I became Canadian, so, you know, handle that one, Rick.
He's a good friend. We tease each other like brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything that you want to add at this time that we haven't sort of touched on before we ask you the difficult questions to wrap up our show?
No, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for being interested in what we're doing.
Now, I will be asking for your social media links, but...
I was about to say social security number.
That's... It's a tax audit.
Yeah, that'd be Rick. Don't give it to Rick.
No, we do have a few questions just to get a little bit more of Kurt's sort of like Disney side when you're in the parks. And what we'll do, Rick and Steve, if it's all right with you, we'll just pick randomly a question that we want to ask and go from there. So,
okay.
Rick, do you have a question? Of the 12 that's down here that you would like to ask?
Yes, I think I'll go for the low-hanging fruit and ask what your favorite park is.
I heard you guys talking about this on your last show. I like Epcot, especially World Showcase I'm going for. I can't wait till they finish it.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm a big fan of World Showcase. Epcot is my favorite park.
Let me extend that question for just a little bit, since World Showcase is your favorite part of Epcot, and Epcot's your favorite park, what pavilion would you like to see added to World Showcase if you could choose?
Don't say West Virginia. Nice try, Rick.
Is that his favorite? Is that what he wants to add?
No, we've just been playing games of choose your favorite. You know, state pavilion.
I think I'll go with what a lot of people say. Australia has been
nice.
I think Australia's got the island. It's got so many different aspects to their culture and food, of course, and animals. I think they could do something really cool with Australia.
Totally. I could get behind that.
All right. Yeah, the food booths for sure.
Oh, definitely. They do have some of the best there during Food and Wine. Yeah.
They got a lot of different, big island has, you know, the deserts, they got the ocean, great white sharks. They've got lots of different things.
Good wine.
Yeah. Yeah. Jam jar. Is that the, yeah.
You can have veggie mart, sarnies.
No. They have lots of Sheilas.
Yeah, they do. I'd fit in, wouldn't I?
Yeah. They have
that's true.
Australia. I've got a few listeners in Australia too that have I've talked to. Matter of fact, I ran into one in World Showcase one time.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. Remember, she gave me a couple gifts from Australia, too.
What is your favorite resort to stay at on property?
Polynesian is my favorite. It was the first deluxe resort I stayed at, like my third trip. Did that a couple times in a row, matter of fact. Got some good rates early on when we went there using the annual pass. And I've stayed there on my Disney vacation points. It's not that difficult to get at 7 months, at least the times that I've tried. But I really like the vibe at the Polynesian. I'm really excited about the extra rooms they're starting to build. I didn't look at it too deeply. Right. Except a recent article that I guess it might be a little bit of a tower maybe. And then so... yeah, I love the Polynesian. I like the vibe, the music, the tiki torches. I like the food. Some of my favorite restaurants are at the Polynesian. Of course, you got the Magic Kingdom right there on the monorail loop. So if I had to choose, Polynesian is my favorite.
One of these days, that's one we've not stayed anywhere on the loop yet.
Okay. Well, yeah, you'll never want to stay anywhere else. I think
I've heard that.
I remember I told you I grew up on the boardwalk. So
yeah.
My wife and I stayed at the beach club. I'll never forget the time she said she wanted to go with me, even when the kids were little. That surprised me. But we really fell in love with the beach club. I stayed there several times. And I mean, again, my favorite park, Epcot, to walk in is nothing better than that proximity to walk into Epcot. But you know, when the DVC was selling at the time we were buying 10 years ago, Bay Lake Tower was available. Yeah. And we bought Bay Lake Tower. And just being in that monorail loop, being the walking distance to the Magic Kingdom is, yeah, location is just so fantastic. I love that. So, yeah, Bay Lake Tower, those three are probably my three favorite.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you this question, because you had mentioned it earlier on in the show. So what cast member role would you like to do for one day?
That was the hardest one for me to answer, Sheila.
Oh, I can choose another one.
No, but I got a good answer, though.
Oh, good. Go for it.
I think I got a good answer. I had to, you know, because all the cast members, I really appreciate them. They take so much garbage from... I can't stand it when people abuse them, because they work so hard and they try and they put a, you know, good effort out there. So I don't want to be abused, but I would like to be a tour guide, maybe even a VIP tour guide if I were to graduate up. But I think taking people through tours, I do enjoy working with people, showing people around. I think that would be probably one of the best jobs for me to do.
You and me both.
All right. I came with a good answer, I think. Then.
Oh, perfect.
All right.
All right. Who is your favorite character? And before you answer, are you the type of person that would choose somebody from one of the other companies that Disney's bought, like Star Wars or Marvel, or are you a person to stick with a Disney character?
Yeah, mine's got an emotional attachment and something from my childhood and someone who I'm always excited to see, who you don't see that much, but I'm kind of known for him. So when I was really young, if you think of when the year that this movie came out, The Jungle Book, I saw it at a really ornate theater close to where I live here and in the town that I live in right now. I remember my mom taking me there. It must have had a really impact on me, but Baloo, the big bear. I'm kind of a big guy too. I love getting pictures with Baloo. He was part of the Kite Tales. I was excited to see him in the Kite Tales. Everyone was saying they were bored with the Kite Tales, but the Jungle Book actually played a role and had King Louie and Baloo there. I think he's a fun, good guy. So I like Baloo.
We actually enjoy Kite Tales too.
Yeah, you know, only Tony Ann, I've heard, on the Disney Crush, they've given a hard time. I think everyone else I've talked to is okay with it. Even Kevin Curtis Allen, I think, you know, if people expect, it was like when they had the Rivers of Light, they were like, oh, that was boring. But, you know, everything doesn't have to be crazy fireworks and music and fire. And so, yeah, I enjoyed it for what it is.
Definitely.
I'm going a little bit off on this one. I don't know what other parks you have been to, but worldwide, what parks would you, whether you've been to or not, would you like to visit in order of favorite to maybe not his favorite?
So again, kind of an emotional choice would be Disneyland. My wife's never been there. Okay. I was there in college, but I hardly remembered. It wasn't a big deal for me, but that one would be really special to get her out to California to see Disneyland. She'll be floored to see the original. And of course we always hear the comparisons. It is got the nostalgia of Walt's park. So Disneyland is the one I want to see first.
Right.
And then next I have another dream that I'm actually seriously thinking about starting to put together. You got to have that vision first,
right,
before you can make it happen. But I'm getting lots of signs and geeks have been talking about it. And part of this would be probably a tour group of my listeners would be do a European tour. And of course do Paris, Disneyland, that, and maybe see a couple countries, including the UK. But that's something that I'm really starting to think about and do in a practical sense. From there, all the others kind of fall in line for me. I've interviewed people from going to the other parks. Shanghai, of course, it'd be cool to go to China. And of course, and I think just the cultures in Japan too.
Yeah.
It would be really exotic and fun to do. But yeah, and Aulani, although it's not really a park, but because I'm DVC, a trip to Hawaii, probably I'd love to do that even before the Far East.
Oh, okay.
Good answers.
Yeah.
Okay. So is there a Disney ride from any of the parks? Is there a Disney ride which is a must-do every time you go to Disney?
Yeah, I'm going to cheat a little bit with a little explanation. So I'll give you a few. Yeah. So I think I don't think this one's ever closed and I always got to do it. And sometimes it's the first time in the park in Epcot is Soarin'. Big fan of Soarin'. Oh. Love both versions. And I always have fun. I always seem to have people that have never been on it with me and stuff. So that's a big fun one for me. Splash Mountain's probably my favorite ride in all of Disney World. Unfortunately, a lot of times it's not open. And if it's cold, it's not that. When you say must do every time, I don't have to do it if it's freezing cold. I don't need to get wet.
Yeah.
But Splash Mountain just checks off all the boxes of what a good Disney ride is. It's long. You got the boat thrill and you got to go down and then you got the happy with all the singing and all the classic characters and songs. So Splash Mountain is a huge, probably my favorite attraction. And I love Tower of Terror just as far as the thrill and the laughs. And I love it when people go on. I had a listener, Travis, who we took on, sat between me and Glenn Kessler, and he was terrified to go on this ride. And he was a lot of fun going on. So that one's always a big favorite one. But there's three that I don't like to miss and usually don't unless they're closed.
Right.
I'm going to ask what your favorite restaurant is. I know from listening, you know, just from what we've talked about, but also from the show, that lounges are a definite favorite of yours as well. So if you want to name a lounge instead of a regular sit-down restaurant, that's fine. Whatever your favorite is.
Yes. Because I ask people this question myself, I make sure I have answers for this question. So going in kind of, this is my top five restaurants. Ohana's always been a favorite. I love the casual family setting. I love Polynesian. Even when they had the skewers, I thought that was really unique. I love barbecue. And so Ohana and all of the pot stickers and the noodles. And by the way, I really like this time. Now they've changed it up a little bit, but it was maybe even better. So I really like Ohana. Love the family atmosphere, and the Ohana means family. So that's my favorite. I love the buffet, so I got to give Boma a shout out. Love Boma. Lots of flavors. Always something great over there. It's very unique. Lots of distinct flavors. So I love that one. As far as the signatures, California Grill. If you're going to, I had my anniversary dinner up there. Great location, good food, good times. Flying Fish is a favorite of mine too on the boardwalk, which just recently opened up and people were giving it good reviews. So I love the atmosphere. I like that open kitchen, great food there. And then kind of a fun one that we always talk about is Beaches and Cream. So I love the atmosphere, love the meals there. And it's, those are my favorite restaurants. Lounges, boy, Disney World. I really love Disney Springs. That was one thing from this last trip coming away from. Someone said to me, it's like a world showcase now, because you can go in there and just pick at different foods and drinks and have such a great time. Jock Lindsay's is a big favorite, has always been, in Wine Bar George. And I just discovered, again, you can treat these as lounges. It's kind of a quick serve, but Polite Pig, because of the barbecue, and it's got all kinds of hors d'oeuvres and appetizers. And then City Walk was really cool too. But Nomad Lounge, tons of great lounges.
Okay, back to me. This is going to be my last question to you, with maybe one more last from the guys.
All right.
So, okay, Kurt, inquiry minds want to know, and it's up to me to get the scoop on you, okay?
I'm getting nervous.
You should be. It was the last question on the list I sent you, and it was, one thing you will never do at Disney again. Is there such a thing in your Disney life, Kurt?
Again, that could be a hard one to answer. I've got an answer, and it makes it easy. I won't have to do it again because it just got canceled. I don't think I'm cheating, because I already said I'd never do it again. But it was a funny story. We loved the Hoop-De-Doo. My friend Judy and Ken, my wife Margita, were going over there. It was a funny story because I went over there, and you know how you're just kind of getting ready. People are kind of gathering around, and I went into the bathroom, men's room, and it was dark, but I didn't think nothing of it. But when I came out, there was a bunch of cast members getting yelled at from some guy from New York, and it was really annoying. But they had canceled the show because they had no power at the Hoop-De-Doo. And then I had stayed at the Polynesian, and I always wanted to do the luau. And when we were looking for plan B, we asked the cast members, could we maybe switch over to the luau? Well, it was a complete disaster. It was not good at all. We were actually in the back of the luau. And I remember my daughter is very theatrical, and she's a huge critic. Matter of fact, we were just in New York City this weekend seeing Broadway shows, and she's so hysterical the way she criticizes. But it was like she said it was kind of like one of those high school plays, like one of those movies with the high school kids. It had the theme, the story, everything was, she was just horrible. And then the server was horrible. And it was, we laughed because they kept bringing us all kinds of wine to drink, but it was just a total bomb. Although some people really, it was funny because I'll talk to people and they just loved the luau. They thought it was fantastic, but that was the one I'll never do again. The Polynesian luau. And now it's going to be a DVC building, so I don't have to worry about it.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Well, you never know. They might bring it back. They didn't say they were going to permanently get rid of it.
That's, they could put it somewhere else, I suppose. But, I think, Judy said years ago when she went, I think she went during her honeymoon, it was actually like a real traditional luau, authentic, whereas this was kind of like a high school play.
Wow. So. Well, maybe we'll see it on Disney Channel before long.
It was the only bomb I think I ever walked away and went, that was not worth it. and that gets a lot there. Actually, if you look at like the unofficial guide, I remember talking to Len Testa one time. He said the same thing. That one didn't get a lot of great reviews.
Oh, wow. What are your top three favorite adult drinks on property?
Ooh, you went off the list.
Well, I know.
Wow. Go for it, Kurt.
I know. That is...
Well, I could have done
oh
favorite lounges, but no, we'll get to that next time.
Inquiring minds want to know this question.
There's two I definitely are easy. I go to all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a third. You know, I've been kind of getting into bourbon too. I like all the flights. Anything that's kind of a flight,
yeah,
I can be convinced of. Like, I remember I did a bourbon flight at the Brown Derby Lounge that I really enjoyed. And now it's really something within the last year I've been, and they have a Knob Creek specially made for Disney World bourbon, single malt, single barrel or something like that.
Right.
That's pretty good. And I'm kind of a beer guy. So Yingling's another, like a beer that they didn't have that in Connecticut for the longest time. They had it in New Jersey, and I knew that I vacationed that, and they had it in Disney World. But I like trying all the different kinds. There's a couple of IPAs that I like and like that. So I'm definitely a beer and bourbon person, but I do drink fancy drinks when I'm down there. The Back Scratcher at, what's the little place outside of Ohana? I always forget the name of that little place, but they've got one. I've always got a Back Scratcher here with me too, because I got them all over the house because I like that drink. And I like being at, you know, I've talked about being at the Polynesian. So that's one of my go-tos. And then the one, the shtick, the one we talk about all the time, it's the best frozen lime margarita in the world at the Mexican Pavilion. Frozen lime margarita is my favorite.
At 11 o'clock, nonetheless, correct?
11 a.m. Well, now, you know, I know I've got a t-shirt I made of it too, but It's now, I think, officially maybe a little earlier than 11, so they're messing up my shtick.
Oh.
You know, because ever since they opened up Frozen, they kind of get you in there a little earlier, like 10:30, and they're starting. Oh, yeah. You got to get there a little earlier than 11, so just a little tip for you. Mm-hmm. If you want to get your Frozen Lime Margarita. It's something my wife talked about, and she kept raving about the Frozen Lime Margarita, just the consistency of the ice, you know, the perfect amount of liquor in there and tequila, and it's just a very refreshing drink. You only need one, then you're good to go. And don't mess around with all the other fancy ones. They'll let you down. Frozen lime margarita.
Right.
That's my go-to.
Cool. All right.
Great questions, guys. One more?
One more from Rick.
From me. Oh, goodness.
From you. The best to last. Or last for best. Whatever way you put it.
Yeah. First is worst. Second is best. Or... that's not even right.
No.
I'll have to ask my kids how to say that. This isn't on the list either, but what is your favorite experience? Like tours or, you know, I know you've mentioned the dessert party that you guys just had for G3. What's your favorite type of extra experience at Disney World?
I do like the tours. And we were just looking at them for our anniversary. Although a lot of them haven't opened back up yet. I'd like to do the Epcot one, like the World Show. I've done the Epcot Undiscovered tour, but I have not done the World Showcase backstage tour. Remember they had the Segways? I never got a chance to do that. I would have loved to have done that. But yes, I am a big fan of the tours. But if I'm going to pick my favorite, and I wish they would bring that. They kind of have this back, like I said, the Rose and Crown fireworks party. I'm excited about doing this again. We just had the best time. And the reason, first of all, you get a really good sit-down experience of the fireworks show. And the Rose and Crown, the food was fantastic. You had all the beer and wine you could drink. And Prosecco, my wife, Margita, and Judy were very happy singing, you know, like 11 o'clock coming out of World Showcase where everyone has left. That was fantastic. I'll never forget that moment. Mm-hmm. And so I love when you're kind of in a late night event like that, although I'm more of a morning person. But if I'm going to do one, if it includes food and drink and fireworks, and then you're walking out when everyone has already left the place, that's kind of my special moment. I don't know if you guys ever attended. We did one over at the Tudo Gusto wine cellar. They had like charcuterie boards after the fireworks. So they had the fireworks and then everyone's leaving and then you just go, and it was really nice, quiet setting with charcuterie board, wine flights. I wish they'd bring those back. That they had in different pavilions around World Showcase. That was fantastic. I remember they were bringing the big ball through the bridge and we had to wait for the bridge. This was after everyone left. And I was worried we weren't going to get home because there was nobody left in the park where the bus is still running. But yeah, I would take that, Rick. Those would be my favorite moments of extra events.
I can't wait to do a tour one day myself.
Yeah. You got to start out with the one at Magic Kingdom, I think.
Keys to the Kingdom.
The Keys to the Kingdom is, start out with that one. That's the keystone, the flagship tour that you should do. Yep. I mean, if you love animals, when they are starting to do the big animals, elephants and rhinos tours. But I did one of those one time that was really a backstage. They called it the backstage safari, it was called. That was fantastic too. But I think they're all good.
You gave some really good answers, and we know a little bit more about you, Kurt.
I think you guys gave some great questions. I had a lot of fun talking to you guys.
Well, it's not over, actually.
Oh, what? All right.
Well, yes, it is. We'll give you a bit of a rest, okay? No, I got a message from my podcast sister, Tony Ann from The Crushers, suggesting that we do an episode on, all of us do an episode on Disney lounges and bars. And she suggested you would be the best to invite. And I can understand now why, after these last couple of answers you've been given. Also joining us will be Scott from Mickey Files. So you and I have actually talked about this, and you have said that you would come back on to talk with Steve and the other guys about drinking at Disney.
I would love to do that.
That'd
be fantastic.
Yeah.
Kind of review some of the drinks and menu items that are, I think that's something I walked away. I already knew that, but I even had a deeper appreciation. Disney has done a great job at the atmosphere and different locations in the parks. And a little tip, if you want to find a lounge at the Magic Kingdom, you know, they don't really technically have one, but the Skipper Canteen has turned into a secret lounge for us that are in the know.
Hey, and maybe what we could do on that episode is each of us make a signature drink, and we can compare over the airwaves.
I'm going to tell you, I've already got one.
I'm all for that. That sounds like a great time. Just let me know. Tell me when and where. I'll be there.
Okay, sounds good. Now, before we say goodnight and close out this show, can we have your social media links on where our listeners can find you?
Yeah, I usually point people to talk about all my community, and that's in Facebook. So look for our group, Geekin' On WDW Family, if you'd like to join, listen about the podcast. I mean, you can go out to my website if you want to find where I'm all at, geekinonwdw.com. But yeah, on all the podcast places that you find podcasts, you'll find us. And thanks so much for having me on. I hope you guys do get a chance to come to the Grand Geek Gathering and become part of our podcast family.
Well, we'd love that.
Yes. Even though Steve might be the black sheep of the family, you know. Yeah. Okay, for our listeners, just for any of our other social media links, just go to monorailtales.com. It's all there. Come and join us on Facebook. We'd love to see you there and get to know you better. And I can't thank you enough for staying throughout this show. So good night, listeners. Take care. Good night, Steve,
good night.
Rick, and Kurt. And
thank you
really
so much.
You really do have a cool name. Say goodnight, everyone. Goodnight.
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 Switch on the sky and the stars glow for you. Go see the world, cause it's all so brand new. Don't close your eyes, cause your future's ready to shine. It's just a matter of time before we learn how to fly.
Thank you!